Project Censored. As always, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Political ties, habitualized alibis, disguise under the guise of democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies looking ominous. So the ocean burned bright with waves full of poison. Genocide, wars, fall for little boys, and the weapons manufactured paid for by attacks of all the bridges and the levees and the mines collapsing. All the prisons, build the capacity, citizens. And the times for the master thief, combine and conquer, steal a masterpiece. Open your eyes and realize what's happening. Time's running out to reach all potential. If you ain't at the table, then you're probably on the menu.
We got that love, we flip our brothers and our sisters.
This is MF Grimm. You're listening to KBOO Portland. This feels like home being here. Keep hip hop alive.
Hey there, KBOO listeners. This is Dr. Tony Zimbardi, host of the new show, Radical Romance. Radical Romance is an advice show for folks who are in non-traditional relationships. Either you're in an open relationship or a polyamorous one, this is the show for you. Please call in. It airs every second and fourth Wednesday of the month at 10 a.m. Look forward to hearing from you. That's Radical Romance on KBOO Community Radio.
Hello. I don't even know your name, but I'm hoping all the same. This is more than just a simple hello.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 9:01 a.m. Next up is a veteran's voice.
The same. Poor ones get but when will he be tried for never asking why? Do we kill people who are killing people to show that killing people is wrong? What a foolish notion. War is called devotion when the greatest warriors are the ones that stand for peace. Children are so tender, they will cross the earth if they think they're saving a friend. They get drawn in by patriotic lies. They're all alone, they're asking the age-old question, why? What a foolish notion that war is called devotion when the greatest warrior
Portland calling. Sisters and brothers, welcome to Veterans Voice Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, 104.3 FM in Corvallis, 91.9 FM in Hood River, or on the World Wide Web at KBOO.FM. I'm Marvin, and Ty is engineering today. I want to say hello to my friend Gary and Darlene back in Nebraska, to Kathy out in the suburbs here in Aloha, Mitty and her wonderful grandchildren, and to my buddy Jim in Gresham. You know, there's a lot going on now, and I've been going through a lot and studying a lot and thinking about our friends who are being rounded up and put in concentration camps and not getting what they're supposed to be receiving while they're in these prison concentration camps. And every time I see a sign at a rally or something and they talk about due process, I always go up and talk to the person who's got that sign, because due process is so important, you know. It's in our Constitution. But they're not doing doing the Constitution. They're just throwing it out the window. This guy in the White House, he doesn't care about the Constitution. He doesn't care about anything except making money for himself and his friends. But it sounds like he may be getting a payback here soon for some of his antics when he was a fool. And one of the ones I looked at in the I carry a Constitution of the United States in my, I have a bag I carry around with me all the time that I put stuff in, I always dig it out and read some stuff. You know, you gotta be up on this stuff. And the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution: no person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a present or indictment of the grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militias, when in actual service in times of war or public danger, nor shall any person be subject to the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, not to be deprived of life, liberty, and property without due process of law. Due process of law. And our friends aren't getting their due process of law. Period. You know, they're getting these people right off of the streets. Right off of the streets. Just, you know, that's not the America that we know. You know, us folks that were in the service, you know, we swore to uphold the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And right now, that enemy is domestic, and it's our own government doing it. And you know, I read an article where First Nations people have been rounded up and put in these concentration camps, but they get out. You know, it takes a while, but they can get out. And that's just, you know, being a brown person in this country is not good right now. Not good at all. Who else did they get? I was watching or reading something about that. I can't remember who it was, but it was something that I there was. And another one, I think it's the 14th Amendment to the Constitution that, yeah, Section 1, all persons born or not naturalized, my mouth is really dry this morning, naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. No state shall make or enforce a law, any law which shall abridge the privilege. There's more to that. But it says again right here, without due process. Everybody should get a constitution, a pocket constitution, and carry it around with them. You know, they don't teach civics in school anymore. So that's a real problem. A real problem. I was also wondering, you know, they're using the military, the National Guard, and just, you know, sending it to Los Angeles. You know, that was just so horrible. Like I said last time, you know, when I saw that, them sending National Guards to Los Angeles, the first thing that came into my mind was Kent State, you know, where four young students were killed by the Ohio National Guard, and 12 or 13 were wounded, including my friend Joe Lewis was wounded there. I just, you know, what happened to the Posse Comitatus Act? You know, well, they're not supposed to be doing that stuff. But what I was wondering, you know, we started our show in 1991, and we did it on Gulf War, the first Gulf War, and we did a lot on the Gulf War syndrome, the illness that these folks were having when they came back home from, you know, their service in illegal, what I consider illegal and unjust war. And I was wondering what the military budget was back in that in 1991. And it's $299 billion, 299 $370 million back in 1991. That's a lot of money. In that time, the Soviet Union, our big enemy, the Soviet Union, imploded. So we thought, well, we're going to get some of that peace dividend now. We're going to have, you know, we're going to have money for everybody have health insurance. You know, everybody going to get a good education. You know, we thought all that money is going to come back into what it was originally supposed to be for. But boy, were we wrong. Because Colin Powell, General Colin Powell, and Secretary of State Colin Powell let us know that that wasn't what's going to happen. You know, instead of having the big bad Soviet Union as our enemy to send our troops into fight, they said, now, you know, we got to be ready to fight a two-front war. Two different front war. That's going to take money. And so in 2025, the military budget was $831.5 billion. That's a lot of money. You know, that's a lot of money into a military. And I tried to find what the military budget was going to be for 2026. And I'm pretty sure it's going to be over $1 trillion. $1 trillion. What did they have to cut to get $1 trillion for the military? Just a whole lot of stuff that, you know, that was that we need for us, for civilians, for the general population. But gotta have that military. Got to be around the world. And I'm going to talk about that too. But in that military budget, they don't include nuclear weapons, the cost of storing and keeping up, you know, with the nuclear weapons and test. They don't test them anymore like they did down at Nevada test site that we used to go down and join other people down there that, you know, were against the nuclear testing, which I still don't like. But I was wondering what, how much it cost a year to keep those weapons up. And it's through the Department of Energy. It's not through the military. It's through the Department of Energy. And through my reading and everything, what I, you know, they throw out a lot of numbers at you that's kind of crazy. But I've kind of found out it was $19.85 billion a year for the upkeep of the nuclear weapons and for, you know, other things to do with the nuclear weapons. But, you know, I was also, I couldn't find it, and I was also trying to find out if we're spending money to upkeep Israel's nuclear weapons. I couldn't find that anywhere. So, you know, we give them so much money every year, and they're using it against our sisters and brothers in Gaza and in the West Bank. Boy, the West Bank is, you know, the occupation of the West Bank is just getting so horrible right now. It's always horrible. Anytime a foreign country occupies your country, that's a bad thing. But right now, the West Bank is really getting just the Zionist settlers are just going after the Palestinians in the West Bank. They're beating them. One American Palestinian was killed. They're burning down houses. They're burning up cars. They're burning up crops. That's just, you know, and but right now, every, you know, the whole world's kind of got their eye on Gaza, which is a genocide. I was in the front where our telephones here at the station is, and there was this poster that somebody had made, and it was, you know, really, really interesting, and it talks about genocide in Palestine, in Gaza. How half the people, half the human beings that are being killed in Gaza are children. Are children. When this whole mess is over, and the people of Palestine start rebuilding their country, you can rebuild a building and you can rebuild the infrastructure and all that, but with all these younger children being killed, how are they going to build their population back up? You know, Palestinians don't have the right to come back into their own country because Israel blocks that. How are they going to get the population back up where it needs to be? The right of return is really important. I was talking to my friend yesterday, and she brought up about right of return in Palestine. But they don't have the right of return. They don't have the right of anything, the Palestinians. They don't have a right to their own water, their own electricity, their own medical care, their own food supply, because it's all controlled by Israel. There was a song I was listening to about people that are in Israel, in Palestine, trying to help the medical doctors, the nurses, just anybody there trying to help the suffering of the Palestinians, and how they're being killed, being bombed, being killed. Also, I don't know who brought it up, me or my friend brought it up, but there's another peace flotilla boat heading to Palestine. This time it's leaving from Italy. And just see how far it gets before, you know, Israel stops them, you know, on the open seas. Now, you know, even if they're in Palestinian waters, the Israelis are going to block them. What does one ship, little ship, they can't carry a whole bunch of food or medicine or the needs of the Palestinian people, you know, but they're still going to block that little ship. And maybe kill the people on it, which has happened before. But the embargo has got to be broken. It has to be stopped. The people of Palestine are starving to death. They're not getting enough water to drink. They're not getting, of course, enough food to eat. They're being moved around their country, you know. Somebody said that Gaza's now just one big concentration camp where they're moving people around and around and around. And not only are they going to try to go to get some food to feed the children or the elderly or their other family members, they're being killed. They're being killed by doing, you know, just trying to feed. You know, we have to start thinking, like my friend said, we have to start thinking about getting things better for the Palestinians. You know, we can't always think of the bad. We have to start thinking good. What good are we going to do for the Palestinians? What good are we going to do for the people in Sudan? You know, what good are we going to do? It's good things we need to do. Now, we can't just always think about the bad things that are happening. We have to think about the good things that we can do. And I have a whole bunch of stuff that I want to talk about, and I always run out of time because I get stuck on things. And the one thing that was brought up that was given to me in Workers' World Party.
Yes, I sent a press release information.
They gave out a this really nice article about affirms our full solidarity with the Iranian people who are facing a targeted, unprovoked, and unprecedented surprise attack. And what I think did that happen a week ago? Ty, the bombing of Iran, was it last week or a week before?
I don't know.
I can't remember either. So this paper came out, but it's very good. And U.S. Imperialism and its proxy, U.S. imperialism and its proxy in the region, the Israeli military carried out this aggression. They're talking about the bombing of Iran. The bombing of nuclear power plant or power stations is just unbelievable to me that they would even consider doing that. The fallout from the bombing of these nuclear places is just crazy. They probably think about it, but they don't do anything about it. You know, these people are going to be downwinders like we have here in this country from the nuclear testing down in the Nevada test site. When they bomb nuclear places, it's just unbelievable that they would even think about doing that. I remember when that happened, a lot of you folks are new to cable, but a lot of you have been around cable for a long time. And one of the guys that was on this show with me for years was Bill Byers. And Bill Byers was an atomic veteran. You know, I've told you this before, but the younger folks don't know. He was an atomic veteran. He was used down in the Nevada test site during the 1950s, where they would explode these nuclear bombs, and then they'd walk military troops into those bombs areas, you know. And so when I heard about the bombing of Iran, I thought, boy, Byers would get really angry about what was happening, because he knew a lot about the nuclear craziness that this country does. He's been to Nagasaki and Hiroshima in Japan quite a few times. You know, he when the Japanese would come to the United States, and he was always helped showing them around, and he went down to Nevada to the test site with them and you know, talked to them and everything. In fact, what was it, 80 years ago yesterday or the day before? In New Mexico, you know, it was the first blast of a nuclear bomb in this country. 80 years ago. And look how far it's came in those 80 years. My gosh. You know, more deadly. These things are more deadly than they ever were before. I can't imagine what would happen if they would drop one of these bombs on someplace. It just completely crazy. And I don't know if I, like I was talking to Ty, you know, I started watching Free Speech TV on my satellite at home, because I live in the mountains and I don't get TV very well. And it's really interesting listen to the people talk about, you know, what's going on today in the world. I watch Al Jazeera English, which is really good. Really, really good things. Tom Hartman, I watch Tom Hartman on Free Speech TV too. But I don't know if it was on Free Speech TV or Amy Goodman or some thing where they was talking about the nuclear dropping of nuclear weapons in the war in Ukraine. You know, what would they do? Would they drop smaller ones in different areas, or, you know, would they drop a big one, you know? And I thought, the little ones are just as bad as the big ones. Just as bad as the big. They're talking about dropping little nuclear bombs. Everyday thinking of dropping even one of these things is just completely craziness. So much for that. I was also, oh yeah, here it is. The West Bank is under settler colonial siege. It's just, my friends. Ty, you want to get that next record up before I get this thing ready to talk? Yeah. To talk about? My throat's kind of going bad here, buddy.
dust where the olive trees weep. A story of courage, a promise to keep. The whispers of children, a song on the breeze. A prayer for the morning, for a moment of ease. The rubble-strewn streets, a canvas of gray. But the spirit of Palestine will not fade away. From the camps of Rafah to Jenin's strong stand, we see your resilience, we're holding your hand. We are here for Gaza, our world standing tall. We are here for Palestine, we'll answer your call. From the mountains we shout it, from the shores of the sea. For the land and its people, for the right to be free. We are here for Gaza, our voices will rise. A symphony of hope underneath weary skies. We are here for Palestine. Until justice prevails, we will not stand apart. The headlines may flicker, the world looks away, but the truth of your struggle is brighter than day. The fisherman's prayer on a sea turned to red. The baker who shares his last portion of bread. The medic who races through alleys of fear, wiping away a lone terrified tear. These aren't just stories, they're letters of light, a testament to your unwavering fight. We are here for Gaza, our world standing tall. We are here for Palestine, we'll answer your call. From the mountains we shout it, from the shores of the sea. For the land and its people, for the right to be free. We are here for Gaza, our voices will rise. A symphony of hope underneath weary skies. We are here for Palestine, with every beat of our heart. Until justice prevails, we will not stand apart. They can build.
I got. I'm not going to read this stuff. West Bank under colonial siege and stuff. I want to talk about some books that I have. I just got some books that I've. Some of these I've had for a long time. And this one is on civil disobedience by Henry David Thoreau. That's a really good book. That folks, if you get a chance, it's an old book, you know, Henry David Thoreau. It's a really good book to read and come up with ideas how civil disobedience is really a good thing. You know, guerrilla theater is really good, which I'm going to... another book that I have is Peace is Every Step, and that's by Thich Nhat Hanh. Vietnamese monk. He passed away a few years ago, but this is really a good book. If you ever get the chance to read it, The Path of Mindfulness in Everyday Life. It's a great book, and it talks about, you know, peace, driving meditations and walking meditation. Talks about what the roots of anger is, nourishing healthy seeds. It's just a really, really good. I went to his compound in Vietnam, and it's really a really nice compound. You know, it's just really peaceful and calm, and it's just he was just a really wonderful person. And I got some more books I want to talk about here. This book here is really, really, really good. It's called Poets Against the War. It's edited by Sam Hamill with Sally Anderson and others. Some of the poems in this book, it just really... Just you know, if you got time to read a book, which I wish everybody would read books, get a book of poems. It's just really wonderful, these poems. If I can find the one I wanted to read. I stand barehanded at the door of the bell. My fingers flutter across its gnarl, rot from truckloads of luck-kissed coins and medals. My knuckles, a soft talk on the gulf. My fist thrown... I'm really not doing good this morning, folks. My fist half thrown a trunk... Not even a grave note. Against the bell's heavy hang, I manage a salvo of knocks for the ignorant living and scrabble of nails from the dead. I'm not doing this very good this morning because my mouth's really dry, but it has some really good poems in it. I won't read some because I'm having trouble. But there's a lot. Casualty, cranes in August, geese October 2002, Billy Bush, Sam Ton of the Forgotful Sea, January 2003, Vermont, on his way to Kuwait. What, no count? White House has disinvited the poets. That's kind of nasty. Baghdad, monuments, the last threshold, the Olivewood fire, Gulf War, New Hampshire, February 7th, 2003. Statement of conscience, wartime radio, cello, enough. Oh, this is a good one. Statement of Conscience. That's really a good poem to read. But this book, if you ever get a chance, sometimes I'll just go on the internet and look up poems, you know, poems of peace or poems against war or whatever, you know, I'm feeling like doing. I will go on the internet and just look up poems, and I'll read some poems, which really helps you. You know, it calms you down, makes you think, you know, deeper into what's going on in the world. You know, poets are precious. Poets are precious people, you know. They're just wonderful, wonderful people. And another book that I got was really interesting. I just started it the other day. Paths of Dissent. Soldiers Speak Out Against America's Misguided Wars. and it's edited by Andrew Bekovich and Andrew Bekovich and Daniel Sushin. And it's this story is about folks, you know, who went into the military with, you know, Star Spangled Banners in their eyes and saw what happened and how it changed their whole belief system about what a war is really all about. And the first one was very interesting story. It was about a young man who went into service at 17 years old. He went to a military academy, West Point of the U.S. Army, West Point Military Academy. How things really changed. He said once he got out of that fairy tale world of West Point, he says, then reality hit him. He says some of the folks that he went through the academy for 4 years went to the Middle East, the Gulf War, and how many of them had been killed? How many of them had been wounded? How many of them had those wounds made them lose their arms or legs or other body parts? How many of them they have serious PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder? It talks about when he finally went to I think it was either Afghanistan or Iraq, one of the two he went, and how everything changed for him when he saw it firsthand what happened. This is a guy who went to, who was going to make a career out of the military. He was a second lieutenant, and then he was a first lieutenant, and how it changed his whole life, and how he became a peace activist after his experience in the war. And the whole book it just got story after story after story about, here's one called A Sailor's Story. Talks about the steps. Reclaiming My Morality is another story. Us veterans, especially war veterans, we learned what this craziness was of a war, and that's why we become peace activists when we came home. Well, we're still peace activists in our 70s, in our late 70s, most of us non-vets. With the younger vets coming up, they're going to take our place and keep it going. And I remember one time this reporter asked me, I can't remember what it was, some question about, how do you feel about, these wars continue? And I said, we'll just keep talking. And that's what we'll do. We're getting to the age now where we're, a lot of us older veterans are passing away. Right now, some of the Veterans for Peace Friends are doing hunger strikes back in D.C. They're not doing it to the very end, because being as old as we are, they're doing it until their body says, "Well, I can't do it anymore." Then someone else will take their place and keep it going like that. You don't hear about that on regular mainstream TV or the news. You hear it on stations like this, which fundraising is really important to us, and you can do that by going onto the website kbo.fm, and you can donate there. I don't have the address right with me right now about the station, but you can go on the website and you can see if you want to send, you know, like I do, I always send a check, and it'll have the address to send the check. Oh, there's another one. I don't know how it works because I'm really bad at this computers and stuff like that. But you know, it's important to keep our radio station alive. And I say ours because it is ours. It's our radio station. I got a couple more books I want to talk about here. This is, I just got this one too. I haven't started reading it yet. It's called When All Else Fails, The Ethics of Resistance to State Injustice. And it's by Jason Brennan. I haven't started reading it, but When All Else Fails, The Ethics of Resistance to State Injustice, which we have every right to do it, Resistance, the fourth option. Defensive ethics, the general framework, government authority arguments for special immunity, other general arguments for special immunity, just say no, the ethics of following unjust orders. That's a big one right there. My friend, she talked about the, you know, don't obey unjust orders before they're even given. She explained it to me a lot better. Lying with intent to sabotage, vigilante justice, what judges should do in response to unjust laws. Must you resist? Some closing thoughts. As soon as I finish reading some of these other books, I'm going to definitely read this book because it's really good. From what I've, you know, what I've, a little bit I've seen about it. And then this book here, it's by Barbara Deming. It's called Revolution and Equilibrium. I didn't know, it was written back in the 70s. You know, I didn't know much about it. Sorry, that was to get my computer working. I have to have that on. I'm so sorry, you guys. And she would really be mad at me because she was always, turn your phone off. If you're going to be in here, turn your phone off. So I'm really sorry, you guys. I'm sorry, all my friends. But this book, my friend, this was a book that was suggested for her to read. She told me about it, and so I went ahead and picked it up. I haven't started reading it yet, but it's, from what I've seen, it's really, really going to be good. Peacemakers, The Ordeal of Sane, S-A-N-E, the really good thing. San Francisco to Moscow, Russia, Let Them In, Courage for the New Age, Letter, International Peace Brigades, Southern Peace Walk, Earl Reynolds, Strangers in This Country, In Birmingham Jail by Dr. King, Open Letters to the New York Times, The Temptations of Power, Report of a Visit to North Vietnam. We are all part of one another. There's a picture of Barbara Deming right at the first. She's talking to Fidel Castro. She's talking about peace to Fidel. I really want to read this book. But, you know, I got priorities because I got so many books I want to read and get going. But hopefully some of these books have got your interest in you and you'll think about reading them. I was going to talk about I have to take another drink here, friends. I wanted to talk about doing things, doing important things when your country is in trouble. How people stand up and take on different jobs. Maybe it's going to protest marches. Maybe it's writing articles. It's just so many things people can do. But there's a group of people who really take that next step. And one of them was the White Rose Society back in young college students that were against the Nazis and how they did different actions and how they did posters and these are just young college kids that were taking that step because they figured out really fast what the Nazis were up to and how their lives were sacrificed. You know, they had all gotten captured and had all been killed by the Nazis, but they took that step because they wanted to help people. They wanted to help people. And every war, there's these people that make that step to maybe doing guerrilla theater, maybe, you know, postering at night, you know, just different things. And there was a couple, I really wanted to talk more about them, but I just... And it was about the Vietnamese, some of these Vietnamese women fighting against the Americans or the French or the South Vietnamese army. These young women that made that step. And two of the were sisters, and they were up around Hue and My Lai area in Vietnam, where they would help move people through areas that were controlled by either the Americans or the French or whoever they were fighting. How these two young women, you know, knew how to get people through those areas. They took that responsibility, and how their lives changed completely, you know. And after the war, they just went back to, you know, raising the families, but they saw that need to do something, and they did it. Another Vietnamese woman, she was the same way. She became a spy for the Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese fighting against Americans, and how she would get messages through American-held areas. How she would also help people travel through areas that were controlled by the Americans or by the South Vietnamese. These people that took that extra step. You know, maybe, and some, you know, like in World War II, some of the women took that extra step, and you know, they paid the price, but they saved a lot of lives. I think I am going to next time. I am going to get those stories, because they are really uplifting stories. These women were just amazing women. Just amazing women. And I think I'm going to do that. I think I want to start pretty early on working on doing that and talking about those women. But, you know, going back through the books, Paths of Dissent, Soldiers Speak Out Against Americans' Misguided Wars, When All Else Fails, The Ethics of Resistance to State Injustice, Barbara Deming, Revolution and Equilibrium, Poets Against the War, Peace is Every Step, Path of Mindfulness in Everyday Life, and that's by Thich Nhat Hanh. Vietnamese monk. And the other one is on civil disobedience by Henry David Thoreau. Like he told the sheriff, if you don't like your job, get another one. Also, the Constitution of the United States of America. And like my friend, she's told me, we need to talk more about good things that we can do to make this place a happier place. Well, we'll be back on August 15th at 9 a.m. And there it is. Thanks, everybody, for putting up with me. I appreciate it.
Where the olive trees weep, a story of courage, a promise to keep. The whispers of children, a song on the breeze, a prayer for the morning, for a moment of ease. The rubble-strewn streets, a canvas of gray, but the spirit of Palestine will not fade away. From the camps of Rafah to Jenin's strong stand, we see your resilience, we're holding your hand. We are here for Gaza, world standing tall. We are here for Palestine, we'll answer your call. From the mountains we shout it, from the shores of the sea, for the land and its people, for the right to be free. We are here for Gaza, our voices will rise, a symphony of hope underneath weary.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 10 a.m.
This is your lucky day. You have the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to pay amazingly high prices for some incredibly worthless stuff. Just keep listening, and we'll tell you over and over and over and over and over and over and over.
Aren't you glad this is KBOO? KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. Non-commercial.
Over and over and over and